This is Bria. I am a guest host at Joy on Paper today, and I have the honor of welcoming you to a special sci-fi hour. Our regular host, Patsy Gill, has invited me to do this special show, and it's been such an honor. I've been able to come a few times to the studio and introduce some amazing science fiction authors, and that's what I get the privilege of doing today. So we're going to start by introducing an author named Clint Hall, who has written a debut novel, so his very first sci-fi novel. And the way we're going to start by introducing him is by playing a book buzz, which is a two-minute review that I get to do for the book. And so, Big Ed, the book is called Steal Fire from the Gods, and we just played it last month in January. So Big Ed is going to find that book buzz. And I believe it's titled SF Book Buzz 2024. Yep. Okay, so we're going to play that book buzz now, and then we'll get a chance to talk to the author.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2023 debut novel, Steal Fire from the Gods, by Clint Hall, with stellar narration by Adam Verner. Now, let's download the book buzz. In a dystopian future where AI machines have conquered humankind, Gunnar Graves hides the truth of his cybernetic heart for fear of reprisal from other human survivors. Ever since he lost his parents in the unwinnable battle against the machines, which were so adept at harnessing the Earth's elements that people called it elemental magic, Gunnar has been hearing voices and dreaming strange dreams. When a war machine arrives to kidnap a child from Gunnar's village, his rage awakens a power stirring within him. In the heat of anger, he terminates the machine and rescues the child. Instead of being hailed a hero, he's mistrusted by the village. If he can wield the same power as the enemy, what does that make him? His exile leads him to unexpected places and to people who have harnessed their own elemental powers called Scions. Their mission aligns with his: put an end to AI rule. Yet the quest looks more like a suicide mission while Gunnar struggles to tap into a power greater than himself. This debut sci-fi takes readers on a thrilling adventure with unforgettable characters and a heavy dose of fantasy. Author Clint Hall is a storyteller, speaker, and podcast host. Known for narratives that instill a sense of hope, wonder, and adventure, Clint's work has been published across multiple anthologies and magazines. And he was recently named a double finalist for short fiction in the 2021 Realm Awards. His podcast is called The Experience, Conversations with Creatives, and is available on all major platforms. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Thank you so much, Big Ed. And Clint, do I have you on the line?
Yes. Hey, Bria, how you doing?
Hey, it's so great to have you on the show. I am so excited to talk about your book. And let's just start by saying, what was the thread of the idea that even got you writing about AI takeover? The premise is almost a little bit dystopian. I don't know if there's a short answer to that or a long one, but go for it. Tell us, how did this idea get started?
I don't have a short answer to anything.
That's okay.
I write about AI for a living. I'm a copywriter for a large tech company, and I was writing about these AI solutions that would help farmers basically get better crop yields. So they would measure the topography of the land and the soil quality and rainfall and all this kind of different stuff to try to get better crops. And I just had this weird idea one day. I was driving my car and I was like, if there was ever anything to like the whole idea of elemental magic, that you can throw a whole bunch of different things together and get certain astounding reactions, that AI is actually going to figure it out, okay? And so I started thinking about things like, the old crazy folklore of bubble, toil and trouble, throwing eye of Newton, the boiling cauldron, and saying magic words, right?
Yeah.
I tried to start breaking it down into different scientific variables. So the eye of Newton, that's just an element, right? And then the boiling cauldron, well, that's just the application of heat energy. And the magic words are sound vibrations, okay? And so I kind of built this magic system using that idea, right? But that it would have to be so intricate that only AI would probably be able to figure it out. And if any humans had ever even gotten any of it, right, it's probably just a total fluke. So I was in the car, and I kind of having these ideas, and I got home, and I wrote this. I had this line in my head, and it was basically just, the Human Alliance knew it was over when the robots started using magic. And it made me laugh. And I called my wife, and I kind of pitched it to her, and it made her laugh, too. And it just started from there. And I actually, that line, a derivation of that line, is the very first line.
Yeah, I was going to say, yes.
Yep. Yeah, so everything else was built off of that. I just started going from that super weird idea.
Well, the great thing is you're in good company. There are a lot of really weird ideas that come into play when we're talking sci-fi. And
absolutely.
You brought up such a wonderful topic that I wanted to address. So when we talk sci-fi as a genre, generally speaking, we're talking about something that could be science-based, even if it's not something we've necessarily discovered yet, right? So futuristic fiction imagines that science might get us, technology might get us to a certain point. Fantasy as a genre, on the other hand, is typically explained by magical elements. You've got this incredible blend. So I can tell you where I categorized your book, but where do you categorize your book, and how does that play when you're selling your book and marketing your book?
You know, it's a great question, because without really going too far in anything that would spoil the novel.
Okay.
With sci-fi elements. However, I think that it's a lot easier to shelve it as science fiction, and that's the choice that my publisher made, and they know a lot more about selling books than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So fine by me, I get it. You know, if you're going to talk about things like War Against the Machines, that's obviously going to fall more clearly into a sci-fi category. But I tell you, the blend of these two elements is something that we're starting to see more and more in the publishing industry. We're seeing a lot of what people call science fantasy, right? Which is blend. And I think it's because we all grew up with Star Wars and so many of the derivations, and a lot of even like the superhero genre very much blends sci-fi and fantasy elements together in the same story. So I think we're seeing that more and more. So I think of it as a fantasy. But my publisher decided to categorize it as sci-fi, and I don't disagree at the same time. But, you know, the thing about it is, though, all of that stuff is kind of just the setting. You know, when people ask me what my book is about, you know, if I'm joking around, I'll say, well, it's about magic robots. It's not really about magic robots. It's actually a story.
That's a great hook,
story,
though.
It is. It's a lot of fun, right? And it gets a laugh, and that's great. This is really a story about a guy who's undergoing a crisis of faith. You know,
yes, and that's another piece I wanted to talk about was this character Gunnar Graves, our main character, has a bit of a crisis, and it's involved with just his parents had faith in God, he does not.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that that element and what it is that Gunnar, again, without spoilers, we want people to come in and experience this book, but also you're the author, you get to tell as much or as little as you want about it. So talk about the little bit of faith element that appears in here.
You know, sometimes things go wrong in our life, and we can point to where we went wrong. You know, we can point to, I'm assuming plenty of believers are listening to this, but you know, we can point to, hey, here's where I turned away from God. But if you're even not a believer, you can just say, hey, here's where I did something dumb. And then that's where my life kind of, you know, went off the rails. But sometimes it's not like that. You know, sometimes, and I'll just say this from a believer's perspective, sometimes we can feel like we did all the right things, and then our life still went in a direction that we feel like maybe isn't fair. And that's what happened to Gunnar and his family. His parents did everything the right way. They worshiped, they prayed, they read their Bible, they were good to other people, they helped other people, and then they got absolutely annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
And they got absolutely annihilated by a force that you would say was sort of wielding the power of God, because they were wielding these elemental powers. And that just doesn't make any sense, right? And that's what Gunnar is struggling with, because he can't let go of this idea of faith, because it was so instilled in him. But at the same time, he's having a hard time reconciling that with how could God let this happen? And so that is a very fundamental piece of the actual story. right, that I'm telling with this book. You know, all the other stuff is the fun stuff, and of course it's, you know, hey, I don't want people to get this wrong. This is a fun, fast-paced action sci-fi story.
It is, yes.
But that's
yes.
the real story at the heart of it.
Yeah, and we do have a very widespread, diverse audience of all backgrounds, yeah. I imagine. So,
sure.
yeah,
sure.
So there might be some who say they would believe in God or do or don't. But all that to say, this type of exploration where the character actually has lost his parents in the past when we meet him.
Right.
So it's not,
right.
that's not a spoiler. That's already happened. He's yeah. a young man who is grappling with that loss even still all these years later, and the consequences of just kind of his own journey, which some of which is was outside of his. Now, this isn't too much of a spoiler that he is a cyborg. That he, of course, I'm thinking of Tin Man. I'm thinking of Iron Man. He's got that
yeah.
iron heart. And so that piece, oh, it just adds such a great complexity to this, you know, there's machines that have killed his parents, and now he's part machine.
Right.
Talk a little bit about
right.
that element.
Yeah, you know, it was something that came about organically. So I'm sure that there's some writers that listen, and it's always good to give your characters secrets that they may be afraid to share with other people. And I think one of the reasons why that's a good idea is because we all have secrets. You know, we all have these things mm-hmm. that we are yeah. afraid that other people will find out. Sometimes, again, sometimes those secrets are our fault, sometimes they're not. But there are things that we want to keep hidden because we're afraid if people knew who we really were and what was really on the inside, that we were afraid that they wouldn't love us. We're afraid that they would reject us, you know, that we would be cast out.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that wounds, you know, fester in the dark and they heal in the light. And that, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of courage for us to sort of face these things about ourselves that we think would, you know, that would cause everyone to reject us. But then also, these things can be, and this is not just Gunner's story, there's other characters in which this is also, you know, a fundamental part of their story, that our greatest weaknesses or our darkest secrets of shame can actually be the sources of our greatest strength, hmm. particularly when we use them to help other people. And so that was something that truly happened organically. I actually don't go into a story when I write a story. I don't go in with a lot of themes in mind. I just kind of let them happen. And that was definitely a theme that emerged while I was working on this book.
Oh, okay. Yes, that is so neat. Well, and would you call yourself a plotter or a pantser, meaning right by the seat of your pants? Another way to put it, gardener versus architect. The architect plots things out. The gardener does a little bit of exploring to see what's growing.
Yeah, you know, I'm a total plotter, at least from just like this is what's going to actually happen in the story. But I like the term gardener because this is an old Mr. Rogers thing. He had this idea that you would plant ideas in the garden of your mind, and all you needed was a
tiny, oh my gosh,
tiny
you just
little
took me way back.
but it's so wonderful. It's such a wonderful way to think about any kind of creative process because, you know, if you try to think about a garden, a full flowing beautiful garden, it might seem insurmountable, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about it as writing a book or making a movie or writing an album or any of these kind of things. But if you just start with a tiny little seed, well, I've got a tiny little seed.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is plant it, and then you just think about it a little bit, and then it'll grow a little bit. And then you think about it some more, and it'll grow a little bit more. Strategies and different things that you can do to pour water on that. But so that's what brainstorming goes like for me. So when you think about, you know, when we talk about gardening, that's very much what that feels like. It's very much just me just going and building a synopsis of the story.
Oh, that's a wonderful. It's neat to think about the different ways that stories can emerge as a writer.
Yes.
For those who
yes.
are listening, who are writers, it's not that there's right. one right way to do it. There's
absolutely
some people
not.
Have a longer journey of the story is in them, but it took years for it to finally come to fruition.
Absolutely.
And for you, yeah. as this is your first novel. Am I right about that?
Well, it's my first published novel.
First published novel. There we go. That is what I actually meant. But yes, Have drawers full of novels, but my first published novel is yet to be. So, yeah, tell us about the experience. You found a publisher. You and I got the opportunity to meet at Realm Makers Writers Conference last year, and your book was actually coming. So I got to talk to you a little bit about that. If you'll share with our audience just this experience of being a first-time novelist, not a first-time writer, obviously you've been writing, but talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this is a publisher that I've known for a very long time, and publishing is like any other industry in that it is built on relationships. Now, of course, your book has to be great and it has to catch someone's eye, and they have to think, not only do they have to love it, but they also have to think that it's something that they can sell. Okay, so that all goes without saying. But this is a publisher that's known me for a very long time, and I've got relationships with the people who work there, and I've got relationships with other authors. And all of that is important because entering into a publishing contract is kind of like getting married for about 5 years, basically. And the amount of time that it takes to actually produce the book, all of the editing steps, all the marketing stuff, but then even after the release, you know, they're going to continue supporting your sales for a few years. So basically, you're going to have to deal with each other for quite a long time. And even if your book is great, if that relationship doesn't match, then it's probably not going to be a great outcome. So that was sort of my publishing experience here. I've been at this for about 10 years, and I've had lots of different kind of near misses, so to speak, publishing offers for which I was very grateful, but weren't the right offer for one reason or another. I've had the agent, and that turned out to not be what I was hoping it was going to be. So I got to a point, though, where I was still writing very much, but I stopped worrying so much about trying to always be in the right place at the right time, talking to the right person and saying the right thing. And instead just sort of did the things that I knew that I should do, and then just kind of have faith in the rest. And not long after that was when I got this email that, hey, we'd like to publish your book. And they had it for about a year. My publisher was actually going through an acquisition. They were being bought out by a larger company, which was great, but it also meant that it slowed down a lot of things for a while. So they had my book for about a year before they made me an offer. And that was okay, you know, because I was learning to just sort of let go, right?
Yeah, what you're describing is what we call the traditional publishing route. And there is another route that people can choose to take, which is independent publishing. And it's kind of incredible when you think about many, many, many years ago, independent publishing was really not on the radar. It was very much, people saw it like vanity presses were kind of the thing. Oh, you're just paying to get your words out there. It's not that you've actually gone through the work that it takes to craft this wonderful novel that people want to read. So that's what it used to be. Now it's just become something completely different where independent publishing is extremely well appreciated now. And so that decision to say I'm gonna take the time to go through the traditional publishing, which that is that what you're describing is typical from my understanding as well. It takes time. It can take time for these editors, publishers, agents to get back to you. It can take them a lot of time because they have very large slush piles to read through. And you describe relationships. When you meet an agent or a publisher at a conference, you start to form that relationship. They get eyes on you. And there's almost this sense, and tell me your experience with this sense that they take you seriously because you're there. Like you're putting your money where your mouth is. And and so it sounds like you've had this wonderful experience with your publisher, which I'm so glad to hear.
They've been incredible, and I am glad that I chose to wait because I like being a part of a team. And of course, writing is a very solitary thing.
But
when you're working with a traditional publisher, and this is the only one that I've worked with, so I can't speak for all publishing houses.
Sure.
I very much felt like part of a community. And this publisher specifically, it's Enclave Publishing, has a fantastic community, not only the people who work there, but even also just in the reading community. And getting to be a part of that has been very special for me. And I can tell you that, you know, you go through, for people don't know, you generally go through about three rounds of edits with your publisher. A developmental edit, which is basically making the story better. A line edit, which is where they start to fix like maybe some continuity things here and there. And then a copy edit, which is where like, hey, we're fixing commas and you know, missing words, that kind of stuff. And I can tell you that every single step of that process made my story better. And every single person who touched my book made it better by adding something. And I couldn't be happier about that. You know, I feel like there should be several names on the cover of my book, not just mine, because so many people helped make the story better, which is all I care about. You know, I just I just want to make the story as good as possible. So, and they definitely did that. And the design is beautiful in a way.
Oh, yeah. Your cover is so compelling.
They did such a good job. Yeah. They did such a good job with the cover. The interior is absolutely gorgeous. And, yeah, it just, and it's just so much fun. So much of my story is also about connecting with other people rather than being isolated.
Yes.
And that's what this was. I got to be in connection with some wonderful people who really just want to tell good stories, and it's just such a privilege to do that.
And again, avoiding spoilers, but near the end, I'm gonna put it this way. Near the end of the novel, I was getting very heavy Matrix vibes.
Matrix is a huge influence.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all with how the book ends. So, again, not going to spoil anything, but is this, do you consider this book a standalone novel, or you probably were wondering where this is going, or are you considering writing a sequel?
Well, you know, it's such a good question, and I haven't figured out how to answer it yet. Right now, I consider this a standalone novel. If
okay.
people pick this up, you are getting a complete story. You are getting a full character
agreed.
Journey.
Agreed.
Not just for Gunner, but for several of the auxiliary characters as well. The door is certainly open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm supposed to be like the cool writer, like kind of teasing things and hitting. The truth is, I kind of haven't made my mind up yet. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways that this story could go. And
yes.
Do I have ideas? Of course I do. But it's not like I know what I'm going to do and I'm just like being, you know, coy about it. It's not like that.
No. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is certainly a door that is open for follow-up stories, but I don't have anything in the plans right now for that.
Okay. Well, it's very, very... I enjoyed the book so much. It was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
And what can readers do to track you down and buy this book? Website,
yes.
Social media. I know you have a podcast where you're on my end interviewing yes. other people. Tell us how people can find you and what they can expect if they want to jump onto your podcast.
Sure. So the easiest thing to do is just go to clinthall.com. And links to everything is there. Beyond that, you can find the book pretty much anywhere you buy books online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, christianbook.com. And then if you want the audiobook, it's on Audible. If you're a Spotify Premium subscriber, you can listen to it on there for no additional charge above your subscription fee. The book is titled Steal Fire from the Gods. And then the best place to connect with me is just probably on Instagram, and I'm just Clint Hall on Instagram, so easy enough to find. And I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, X, whatever, and Threads, and all those other things. So if you look hard enough,
you're easy to find. I gotcha.
Yep.
So,
yep. And the podcast is called the podcast is called The Experience: Conversations with Creatives. I put it out twice a month, and I just talk to any kind of creative person that I think is interesting. Obviously, lots of authors, but I've also had composers for Netflix, Disney, Marvel, HBO.
Very cool.
I had a tattoo artist, a chef. I've had all any kind of people doing anything interesting, creative.
I love that.
Show, so.
Well, Clint, thank you so much for coming on to the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And next book you have coming out, we will be in touch. I'd love to have you back
you
on the
so
show.
Much. Thanks. Great to talk to you again.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Bye.
And we're going to go to commercial and have our next guest, Jeffrey A. Carver, who is a recent award winner. I can't wait to talk to him. Were you able to find...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The guest host at Joy on Paper for a special sci-fi hour. And we're at the last half of our portion of the show where we get to speak to an incredible author who's been around for many, many, many years writing many incredible science fiction books named Jeffrey A. Carver. And I get the privilege of talking to him about one of his book series called The Chaos Chronicles. So before we start chatting with Jeff, we're going to play a book buzz that I did for one of the books in this series called Sunborn. And Big Ed, if we've got that ready, we'll go ahead and play it. Thank you so much.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 release in audiobook, Sunborn, by author and Nebula finalist Jeffrey A. Carver. Sunborn is book 4 in Carver's The Chaos Chronicles, and Skyboat Media produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Grammy and Hugo winner Stefan Rudnicki. Sunborn is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In this highly imaginative space opera, Sunborn picks up where the previous installment left off, with John Bandicoot and his alien companions traveling in a Star Spanner bubble towards a way station for what they'd hoped was much-needed R&R. But instead, they're alerted to impending interstellar destruction from hyperspatial gravity waves of unknown origin. Stars in the Orion Nebula are dying, and an AI at the way station tasks this collection of capable compatriots with averting cosmic disaster. Aboard a space and time manipulating ship called the Longview, Bandicoot and his crew encounter otherworldly beings and multidimensional travelers. Yes, your mind will be stretched. For hard science fiction fans, this book may be a bit far out, even according to the author. But dabbling in fantasy, in my view, enhances the reading experience of this exciting story. Intriguing character dynamics, nonstop action, and point of view shifts that include bringing readers inside the mind of a sentient and singing star are just some of the elements this fantastical tale has to offer. Author Jeffrey A. Carver has been publishing science fiction since the 1970s, including the novelization of the Battlestar Galactica miniseries on Sci-Fi Channel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, so you got to hear about one of the books in the Chaos Chronicles series, and now I am so pleased to welcome Jeffrey A. Carver to the show. Jeff, are you there?
Hi, Bria. I am here.
Hi. Oh, I am so excited to talk to you. And I know you're calling from far, far away, but I'm not too far, but you know, you're a little bit away right now.
Yeah, I am.
But I'm so honored that you get to call in and chat with us about this book series. You have quickly become one of my current favorite authors. I just have to confess that, because you just happen to write what I love to read. So it works out nicely. And
you made my day a refinish. This is all I need to hear.
Okay. All right. We're good. We can go on. No, we got to keep talking, because I want to know a little bit more about some of the stories behind the book, because I get to enjoy the book. And you are even a returning guest, because Patsy, our regular host who has given me the honor of hosting our Sci-Fi Hour, you got to speak with her a couple years ago when I first did this Sci-Fi Book Buzz, and that was the first book buzz I had done. And I had to confess back then, as I'm emailing you, that I'm reading your book, and for some reason I did not read the cover very closely because it was book four, and I picked it up because I loved the cover so much, and reading, and finally somewhere in the middle of the book I went, this is book four. I've missed three books up till now. And yet, you are so skilled as an author. You do these wonderful backstory hints versus the info dump that most of us as authors are trying to avoid. You do it so beautifully to essentially, I can tell other people, yeah, you can pick up any Jeffrey A. Carver book, you will be hooked. It doesn't matter where it is in the series. You'll want to go back and read the rest. But also, you just are masterclass in writing sci-fi. So let's just start by talking about the Chaos Chronicles as a whole. You've got this series. Sure. Now, number one, is the series complete? We have seven books. And and number two, where do you think this series fits in terms of your other writing, and how has it shaped you as an author? I know those are very broad and encompassing questions.
The first one I can answer easily. We have six books are complete now, and I'm working on the seventh book.
Thank you for correcting me. Okay. Yep. Got it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it starts with Neptune Crossing, which I wrote back in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And so my writing of the series has stretched over quite a number of years. I started this series because I had written a number of very long novels that took me a long time to write. Well, what felt at the time like a long time to write, like a couple of years to finish a novel. And they had left me, in each case, happy and satisfied and completely exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that this was artistically felt good to me, but wasn't really a good way to make a living. So I sat down and I thought about what can I do to... I'm a slow writer. I tend to write long. And those two put in combination means a long gap between books.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe I could do a series of short novels that will each be complete in themselves, but would build a story arc that would be satisfying as well. And this wasn't as common then. It felt like a bolt of lightning to me that I could do this. And I sat down and I wrote Neptune Crossing, and it only took me about a year, which was my goal. And then the second book got a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
It took me about 2 years, which was not my goal.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And as I went, my tendencies to write long books came back. So these books of the Chaos Chronicles are not quite the short, snappy books I set out to write. Well, Neptune Crossing is reasonably short, but the later books in the series got to be pretty long. And books five and six, The Reefs of Time and Crucible of Time,
mm-hmm.
I actually wrote as a single novel called The Reese of Time, but it took me 11 years to write, and it was a huge book. It was like Game of Thrones long. So I broke that into two volumes and published it. I published the two books in fairly quick sequence, so I didn't make people wait a year to hear the second half of the story.
And were there any publisher deadlines? You mentioned having a year goal, and then the second book took 2 years. Was that self-imposed or publisher-imposed? Or
I don't like to talk about deadlines. I have blown every deadline I was ever given. And so now, in the midst of this, my publishing situation changed. Well, of course, the entire publishing landscape changed while I was writing these books, and I wrote the first three books under a contract and got them published. They were published by Tor Books, and then book four, let me think about the timing here. I took a break from the Chaos books and wrote another book in my Star Rigger universe called Eternity's End, which also turned out to be a very long book and took I think 4 years to write or something like that. And that book was a finalist for the Nebula, and I'm very happy that I wrote it and all that. But it did take me away from the Chaos series to the point that I had some trouble re-immersing myself in it once I came back. And then I wrote Sunborn, which is the first book that you
that was my introduction to you.
That was another really long project. And then during that, let's see, when that was finished, I had a contract to do the second two books in the series, which was anticipated to be the entire series. And The Reefs of Time, just, I had a lot of trouble writing it for many years. And
do you know what's so interesting, I think, that if I could just interject this? As a reader, I cannot tell that. I mean, as I'm going through those last two books that are available, it was just like, oh, coming back to some good friends. I mean, it's not—it's so seamless. But to hear it from your perspective is so fascinating, because I sit in the author chair sometimes too, instead of the reader chair, and it's such a—it's a very different experience.
It sure is. It sure is. When I finished that book, I was very satisfied with what I'd done, and it went through, I think, about five drafts, and I have a small writing group that I've been working with for over 40 years now.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. I love that.
They were very helpful in helping me to, you know, shape some of the rougher elements of it and find my way through to the story. I learned a lot about writing and how to write, how not to write while doing this, I think. And then my publisher decided that they didn't want to publish them. Not having read it, they said, you know, it's just been too long. We're going to terminate your contract. They, you know, my agent worked out a good arrangement with them for a kill fee and to revert rights of my older books that they had published. And so I self-published these books. At the time, I was part of a writer cooperative, which helped me with the publication process. But so the last two books are published under my own imprint called Starstream Publication. And now I've republished my entire backlist through that imprint. So I have gone from being solidly in the traditionally published area to now solidly in the indie published area.
What an incredible journey.
It really has been. And again, I had to learn a lot about the publishing process. I was very familiar with how to put a book out in ebook by this point. But to do a new release and to do it with print editions, including hardcovers and audiobooks and all that, was really quite a steep learning curve.
I would imagine coming from the publisher does all that, and then now you are. And can I touch on the audiobook for just a moment? Because
yes, please.
Again, it's very seamless from my reader perspective, where you have the same narrator, Stefan Rudnicki, who he is so phenomenal. He could read the phone book, and I would just be compelled to keep listening. He does the voices so incredibly. I believe he's a Hugo Award-winning narrator. I enjoy his narration so much that's, for the most part, that's how I have listened to all your books. Besides the very first one, I started reading print, and then I was kind of going back and forth between the audio and the print. Was that something where your publisher had gotten him as a narrator for you, and then did you, when you became independent to get your audiobooks? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's another story, really.
Okay.
No, my publisher had not arranged for an audiobook.
So this was all once you were independent. You then did audio.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I really wanted a good audiobook of this series. My agent had arranged for a number of my books to be done with Audible, with them providing the narrator and me not really having any input. I didn't want to do that with these books. So I actually had listened to a number of books that Stefan Rudnicki had narrated.
Oh, me too, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, he does all the Orson Scott Card
stuff. The Ender's Game. I listened to him on that one, too.
Yep. So I reached out to him, and I said, would you be interested in doing any of my books? And he said, well, send me one. Because he had not read any of my books at that point. And I sent him Neptune Crossing, and he arranged, he works a lot with Blackstone Audio, and he arranged for a kind of standard publishing arrangement with that, where they produced the book, and, I got just a standard royalty. But the single book did not really sell very well as an audio book, because the books to follow weren't available. And I think that was a deterrent to readers. Like, okay, why do I want to listen to book one if I can't get books two, three, four, and five? So in the end, I hired Stefan out of my pocket to narrate the rest of the series, and all of the rights are mine. So I get a much larger share of the sales price, and someday I will earn back what I spent to have these books made. And he, he's worth every penny. A good narrator is not inexpensive. So this was an investment. I was fortunate in that some funds became available to me to do this. I had the luxury of saying, I want the best for these books, and these will be forever. You know, my kids will be able to earn income from these books. And more importantly, I guess audiences in the future will be able to have the best possible audiobooks to listen to. That's really what I wanted.
It's incredible.
This is a real long-term investment.
Yes. It's really very fascinating to hear the journey that you've gone on as a long-term author who's witnessed. I mean, you've been witness to extreme changes in the industry throughout the years.
It's just unbelievable.
Just within this series that you've been writing, and just incredible. So, you mentioned when we were emailing, you mentioned the word writer's block. Is that something you're willing to talk to us about a little bit?
Sure. It's something I've struggled with. I've struggling with it now on book 7 of the series, and I struggled with it through books 5 and 6. One reason it took 11 years to write those books, and this partly took the form of just having a really hard time finding the story, pulling it out of whole cloth, out of space, and. Well, not sure exactly what to say about it, except that it's something that a lot of writers face.
Yes.
Some people will say, well, it's an excuse for not writing, or you're letting the editor in your head get in the way and keep you from just getting a first draft down. Now, all of these are sometimes valid critiques, I think, of writer's block, but it's not always the case. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are just things going on. If you have personal losses in your life that affect your creativity and mm-hmm. your ability to do things, and I've had all of these things. I know writer's block firsthand, and I don't have any magic solution to getting past it, but I will say, if there are writers listening who are maybe also struggling, that one of the things I say about this is, talk to your characters and try to understand what it is that your characters really want, and what or whom are they willing to sacrifice to get what they want.
Hmm.
Not just the protagonist, but the antagonist, if there is one, and the secondary characters can be quite important.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just trusting your intuition and saying, okay, I have an idea, I'm just going to run with it, and I don't know where it's going,
mm-hmm.
and it might go nowhere, and it might lead into a huge detour, and I might have to be prepared to just put this on the cutting block on the next draft or redrafts down the way even.
And I agree 100%, because I don't think there's any wasted writing, even if it doesn't make it to the book. So,
right.
Yeah, so but doing the follow the idea makes me go back to a question that I asked the guest we had the first half hour. How do you approach any story? Are you more of the, and we were talking about the phrase gardener versus architect.
Yeah.
Architect is like that plotter who plots it all out before they even start writing. The gardener is a little bit more fly by the seat of their pants writer who
yep.
explores the garden, plants a seed, see what starts growing. Tell us about your method.
That's me. I am definitely a gardener.
Uh-huh.
Or a discoverer.
I was hearing it. I was hearing it, and yes. I am with you. And I don't meet that many authors who are gardeners. So
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. At least me personally. Not that they're not out there, but it's always enjoyable to actually, there is a writer in my own personal critique group who is a gardener like me, and she and I relate so much to that. Okay, I'm not finding the plot today. And it can be a very interesting process when you're a gardener. And you've described it so well.
I once had I worked for many years with the same editor at Tor and at Dell Books before that. And he once said to me, Carver, you are far and away the most intuitive writer I've ever worked with.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, well, you don't know what the hell you're doing until you've done it. And sometimes you don't see it until it's pointed out to you. And I thought about that, and yeah, you're absolutely right. and I one of my early books, for example, Star Rigger's Way, which was kind of set the stage for the Star Rigger universe, has star piloting done as a kind of creative, imaginative endeavor. We're navigating through these streams in hyperspace.
Mm-hmm. What you call end space in your Chaos Chronicles, right?
Mm-hmm. But this is, it's a little different from end space, which is
because it's a different series you're talking about. Okay.
With physics. Yeah, this is a different series where the pilot actually gets into a sort of sensory net and views objectively real streams through hyperspace, but has to kind of map it through intuition and imagination and find the way to the destination that way. And another writer friend of mine said, after reading the books, he said, that was such a wonderful metaphor for the creative writing process. I said,
yeah, it really is.
It is. And I hadn't even noticed that while I was writing it. It had to be pointed out to me. This intuitive bit involves a lot of trust of what your subconscious is going to produce. and a willingness to say, okay, subconscious was off this month. Mm. We'll kick that to the curb. So sometimes you feel like you're wandering in the wilderness and you don't know which direction to go. I felt like Frodo and Sam on the Emmett Mule kind of scrabbling over wilderness trying to find my way. But eventually they did, and eventually I will.
Uh-huh.
But it can be discouraging at times. So you really have to maintain, I don't know, faith in yourself, I guess, and in the muse that you know is there trying to get out. And one of my favorite books about writing is by Anne Lamott called Bird by Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about a couple of things that I think are very useful to any struggling writer. And one is, how do you write a really long book or paint a really complicated painting? You do it one bird at a time, mm-hmm. one little mm-hmm. element at a time. You don't let the magnitude of it deter you. But at the same time, you have to have a sense of what the big picture is, or you have to try to develop that
right,
so that it is all kind of coming together in a single piece. And those two needs sometimes feel like they're at war with each other, or there's a tension between them.
Oh,
and it can be hard to hold them both.
You have given us such beautiful wisdom. I've just enjoyed this so much, and I'm so sad to mention that we are at the end of our time. So before we go, I know I want to keep talking, so we're going to have you back on the show for sure. So tell everybody where they can find you, website, any social media. And I will mention that Bria the Go-Cat is one of my favorite characters in the Chaos Chronicles, not named after me, ironically, but tell us where people can find you.
You can find me wherever you buy ebooks or online. I'm not so much visible in the brick-and-mortar stores anymore, alas. But Amazon, Apple, Barnes & Noble, Kobo Books, Google. My audiobooks are in all of the audiobook locations, or at least the ones that Stefan narrated are available from virtually any place that provides audiobooks, including your local library. So mm-hmm. please support your library.
Wonderful. And your website as well.
That's at starrigger.net. So rather than spell it for you, I'm going to say type my name into your search engine and you'll find it.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you, Jeff, for calling in. It is such an honor to talk to you. And
thank you, Bria. I've loved it. I really enjoyed it.
And again, we will definitely be having you back on the show. So enjoy your trip and we will talk again soon.
All right. Thanks very much.
And bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, Bria.
Oh, well, thank you so much, audience, for tuning in to listen to these incredible authors, Clint Hall and Jeffrey A. Carver, which we ran out of time for me to mention that he just recently won the Frank Herbert Lifetime Achievement Award. So talk about someone that's been there, done that in the sci-fi world. Just such a privilege and an honor to talk to Jeff Carver today. So if you're a writer, get out there, get writing, and take some inspiration. What Jeffrey Carver just shared with us, there might be a little bit of block keeping you from writing your story, but don't give up. Take that next step. Take that next, as Anne Lamott says, draw that next bird and keep moving forward. I think that's some of the just nuggets of wisdom that he provided for us as a seasoned author. And debut author Clint Hall was an absolute pleasure to talk to as well. So be sure to pick up their books. And if you're a reader, enjoy reading those. And I will probably be back in the studio next month with another Sci-Fi Hour. I look forward to talking to you. Take care.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
It's time for the Tuesday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians. Prior Smith speaking from Toronto. Thanks for joining us.